This is Henry Simon, bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have, for obvious reasons, been changed. In one moment, the search for Herbert Hedges, address unknown. And here again is Henry Simon.
Julius Badcock was a man to be feared. A man whose path one simply could not afford to cross. One of the very wealthiest financiers in England, he was noted mainly for three things. His shrewdness, his bad temper, and his collection of fine pieces. This latter consisted of anything and everything that could be termed an objet d'art, and included such priceless relics as the Empress Josephine's favourite teapot, a ruby ring that once adorned the right-hand index finger of Henry VIII, and a stout cane stick, which was said to have supported no less a personage than Socrates himself. But for all this, Badcock was far from satisfied. His collection would never be complete, he told his friends, until he gained possession of the second, of an identical pair of bookends, one of which occupied a place of honour on the desk of his study. As our story opens, he's displaying this piece to his learned colleague, Dr. Justin Morley, who fingers it gently, as though scared that it might suddenly sprout horns and attack him.
£10,000, Julius. Could a pair of china bookends possibly be worth such a sum?
To a collector, yes. I tell you frankly, Doctor, if I had the pair, I wouldn't sell for 20. Nothing in the world would induce me to part with them.
But you haven't got the pair.
I don't need to be reminded of that.
This piece by itself
is worth precisely nothing without its twin.
Perhaps if you tried advertising...
My dear Morley, short of murder, I've tried everything, and to date, I haven't been able to get so much as a whiff of it. Yet I'm convinced that second piece is still in existence. It has to be somewhere.
If it hasn't already been broken by some clumsy idiot and thrown away...
Oh, heaven forbid.
What would you be prepared to pay for it? I mean, if I... Suppose I happen to stumble across it in my wanderings one day. It's not likely, of course, but it is possible.
If you do, you'll have my full permission to purchase it in my name, regardless of the price. Not that it should be more than a few pounds. The chances are that whoever has it, well, is unaware of its potential value. And I wouldn't want to pay more than I have to.
Always the bargain hunter, eh, Julius?
Bargains have made me a wealthy man, Doctor. Why pay £2,000 when I can get it for two? However, it doesn't do to cross one's bridges. First, it has to be found. Yes? What is it, Hedges?
Your correspondence, sir.
No, put it on the desk.
Very good, sir.
No, not there, you fool, you... Watch out for that bookend! Oh, Joe, you blithering idiot! Now look what you've done!
I'm sorry, sir, I didn't see it.
Didn't see it? Are you blind, man?
It doesn't appear to have suffered any damage.
No thanks to this numbskull, clumsy, dumble-headed nincompoop!
Will that be all, sir?
No, it won't be all. I've had my eye on you for some time, Hedges. Only last Tuesday you put a scratch on Queen Anne's candlestick. And before that you overwound Whistler's timepiece.
Sir, I beg you.
Don't answer back. I'm sick and tired of your doddering ways. You'll just have to go, that's all.
Go? But, sir...
Enough. Get your things together and clear off. You're not wanted here.
Very good, sir. I would remind you, however, that I'm entitled to 2 weeks' salary and an extra week for holidays.
I'll pay it gladly to be rid of you. And now get out of my sight before I lose my temper and set about you with Lord Byron's riding crop.
Just as you say, sir.
Oh, that addled-brained parasite.
Don't you think you were a trifle hard on him, Julius? I mean, after all, the only...
Hard on him, nothing. Fellow's a bounder anyway. Should have dispensed with him weeks ago. Now, where were we?
We were discussing the possibility of my purchasing the missing bookend.
Oh, yes. Well, as I said, I'm out to get it cheap. But if I'm pressed, I'll pay any price for it. You understand? Any price at all.
Over the next few weeks, Dr. Justin Morley gave a great deal of thought to the matter of the stray bookend. He was a man who believed in having friends in the right places, and it seemed to him that here was his opportunity not only to curry favour with the all-powerful Julius Badcock, but to make a little money on the side for himself, by way of commission, as it were. Accordingly, he combed every antique shop and second-hand store in London. His efforts, however, went in vain, and he'd almost resigned himself to the fact that the object of his search no longer existed when he received a letter, an anonymous letter, written in a very unfamiliar hand.
Dear Dr. Morley, it has come to my notice that you are anxious to locate a certain bookend, one of a pair reputed to have belonged to the Bard of Avon, better known to his contemporaries as William Shakespeare. It is my pleasure to inform you that the article you seek is to be auctioned together with several other items in the rooms of Blackett and Fish, auctioneers, at 2 p.m. on the 16th of this month. Trusting you will use this information to its best advantage, I wish you good luck, good health, and good bidding. Yours in affection, a friend.
And so it was, at 2 p.m. on the afternoon of the 16th, a rather excited Dr. Morley took up a place in the crowd that filled the auctioneering chambers of Blackett and Fish in Oxford Street. For more than an hour, he sat watching the proceedings, until finally, shortly before 3:15, his patience was rewarded.
Now, gentlemen, I have before me a priceless relic of great significance. As you can no doubt see for yourselves, it's a bookend. But no ordinary bookend, let me hasten to assure you. This particular item dates back to the day...
Dr. Morley was overjoyed to perceive that the auctioneer, a fat little man in horn-rimmed spectacles, was clearly uninformed as to the true origin of the bookend. And he chuckled to himself at the obvious lack of interest displayed by the onlooking company as the bidding commenced.
Now, here's a real chance to show your breeding, gents. What am I offered for this little masterpiece?
10 shillings.
The gentleman's joking, of course. Why,
10 pounds.
10 pounds. 10 pounds I'm offered. Now, I asked you, gents, do you want me to give it away?
Startled, Morley turned to see who was bidding against him. It was quite impossible, however, for the voice had come from the back of the room, and his vision was restricted by the maze of heads which encircled him. With renewed determination, the doctor again fastened his eyes upon the china bookend, which stood on the auctioneer's table, an exact replica of the one which was owned by Julius Badcock.
£20.
£20. Any advance on £20?
£100.
Ah, I see there is one among you who has a deep appreciation for the finer things of life. £100.
£200.
£3.
£1,000, gentlemen. Is there any advance on £1,000?
£1,100.
£12.
£13.
£14.
Oh, this is more like it, gents. £1,400 on bid.
£1,500.
£16.
Morley's dismay was mounting with every second that passed. Obviously, his opponent knew the bookend's worth and was just as determined as he was to have it. But who was going to be fool enough, he wondered, to pay so very much for an odd piece that was completely valueless without its mate? If only he knew just how far Badcock was prepared to go. It had been unwise of him to act without consulting the millionaire further, but he did want to keep it as a surprise. And he'd been authorized to purchase, regardless of cost. Well, it was now or never.
Going for the first time at £2,000.
£2,100.
£22.
£23.
£24.
£25.
That same evening, Dr. Morley presented himself at the home of Julius Badcock, who had just come back from a business trip on the continent and was in excellent spirits. When he learned that Morley had succeeded in purchasing the mate to his coveted bookend, however, he positively exuded goodwill.
My dear fellow, I can't believe I've got it at last. However can I thank you?
It's really nothing, Julius. I'm only sorry I had to pay so much.
A perfect replica. Come. Let's go into the study and have a look at the two of them together.
Julius, I...
By the way, how much did you pay for it?
Well, I was just about to tell you.
Well? £3, eh? If the seller had only known, he could have pushed me up to 3,000. Oh, dear, what fools some people are.
Julius, he did push you up to 3,000.
Of course he...
I couldn't get it for any less.
Do you mean to tell me that...
Will you tell me to buy it regardless of the cost, sir? I simply followed your instructions. You see, there was another fellow at the auction who was every bit as determined to buy, and I had to keep on.
Falteringly, Morley explained just how he had come to pay such a very exorbitant price for the bookend. And at last, after much spluttering and blowing, Badcock regained his composure. Consoled with the fact he was now in possession of his most long-cherished item, he entered the study, accompanied by Morley, to examine the treasures side by side. But there an even greater shock was awaiting him. For the first bookend, the one which had stood so very patiently on his desk for 3 years, had disappeared. Am I to understand, Mr. Badcock, that you're asking me to locate a bookend?
No, Simon. Let me finish the story. When I found it had gone, I questioned the servants. None of them, it transpired, had ventured into the study during my trip to the continent. But I was informed that shortly after my departure, an ex-employee of mine, one Herbert Hedges, had visited the house on the pretext that he wished to recover certain possessions he'd left behind, and he obtained the key to the study door.
You think that he...
I'm certain he came there for the express purpose of getting his hands on that bookend. He knew how much I valued it, and he was out for revenge.
Revenge?
I had dismissed him a few weeks previously for inefficiency.
Oh, I see. Well, it seems to me, Mr. Badcock, this is more a matter for the police than it is for the missing person.
If I inform the police, there'll be publicity. Hedges will hear of it, and the chances are he'll destroy the evidence out of pure spite. That's why I've come to you. I want a private inquiry so he can be tracked down before he realizes I'm on his trail.
And when you catch up with him?
When I catch up with him, and when I've recovered that bookend, then I'll call in the police, Simon, but not before.
Henry Simon will return in just a moment to continue this story. And here again is Henry Simon.
I always refer to this case as that of the missing bookend, although, of course, in reality, it was that of the missing Herbert Hedges. From what Badcock had told me, it appeared quite obvious that Hedges had taken the object in question, and just as obvious that he'd done so purely out of spite for his late master. But where can one look for the sort of man who steals bookends out of pure spite? That was the problem which confronted me. And to help me in the solving of it, I selected Agent Paul Studdy, who, when he had heard all, executed what I believe his fellow countrymen describe, quite aptly, I might add, as a sort of double take.
Oh, now I've heard everything, Chief. This Herbert Hedges guy must be quite a character.
That's not quite how Badcock described him, Studdy, but we'll let that pass. What we've got to do is determine his present whereabouts.
How long was he working for Badcock?
Oh, for about 18 months, I understand.
What was his position exactly? I mean, was he a butler or...
Yeah, I suppose one could refer to him as a kind of gentleman's gentleman.
Huh?
A personal servant or valet, if you wish.
Ah. Well, maybe he's gone into service again.
Quite possibly. The question is whose?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll just have to make the rounds.
You know what they say about birds of a feather.
Come again?
It's quite likely that Hedges might be known to various others in similar positions to the one he occupied in the Badcock home.
Oh, you mean I should look up a few other gentlemen's gentlemen, eh?
Precisely.
Where do I start?
Oh, I'll leave that to you.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid you were going to say. Okay, Chief. Operation GG is underway.
In his own way, Studdy is quite a genius. And after leaving the office, he put his genius to work. He reasoned thus. If Hedges had been employed by Badcock as a valet, then, of course, the chances were that by this time, Badcock had hired another valet to take his place. And it was on this assumption that he formulated a plan of action, which culminated some 40 minutes later upon his arrival at the Badcock home on the outskirts of a very exclusive London suburb.
Good morning, sir.
Oh, well, hi. I'm looking for a... You used to have a guy working here named Hedges, right?
That is correct, sir.
Well, I'd like to speak to whoever is taking his place.
I had that privilege, sir.
You mean to tell me a gentleman's gentleman has to answer the door?
Normally, the door is answered by Wallace, sir, but he is off duty this morning.
Oh, Wallace, sir. Well, I guess that'll make him the gentleman's gentleman, right?
Sir,
Ah, skip it. Look, I'm trying to locate Hedges. You wouldn't happen to know where he is, would you?
I'm afraid not, sir.
Can you think of anybody who might know?
You could try Hollingsdale, sir.
Hollingsdale?
Of Broughton Towers, sir. Lord Allen's country residence.
Oh, he's employed there, huh? I mean, Hollingsdale, I mean.
Yes, sir.
A friend of Hedges?
I understand so, sir.
Well, I'll pay him a visit. And thanks a lot.
Not at all, sir. Good morning, sir.
Yes, that's me. Albert Hollingsdale at your service.
Oh, fine. I'm making a few inquiries about a friend of yours, Albert. Or rather, I was told he was a friend of yours, Herbert Hedges.
Herbert? Oh, bet your life, sir. Known each other since we was nippers.
Oh. Well, he lost his job with Julius Badcock. I guess you heard about that.
Ah, bad business. Real cut up he was.
Yeah, so I believe. You don't know where he is now, by any chance, do you?
Oh, last I heard, he was applying for a position with Sir Francis Sparrow of Hepburn Hall.
Hepburn Hall?
With a H, sir. I told him he was barmy. Ah. Sir Francis is the last of a very long and tired line of Sparrows. It's quite common knowledge he's on the rocks.
Oh, Hepburn Hall. Well, where is it exactly?
Arden, sir.
Arden?
Again, with a H.
Oh, yes, yes, sure, I know it. Well, much obliged, Albert. Do the same for you sometime.
Oh, my dear old bean, how jolly to see you again after all this time.
Huh?
Come in.
Well, thanks.
Make yourself at home. Everything I have is yours, which is precious little, but it shows the spirit's there, eh?
Yes, I guess it does, but
I think of it, you couldn't let me have five till the end of the week, could you?
Well, I really couldn't.
Splendid. Singles will do.
Look, I'm afraid you've made some kind of mistake. My name is Steady. I'm from the Missing
Study.
Yes, that's what I said.
No relation to the Duchess of Devonport?
Sorry.
The Marquess of Chichester, perhaps?
No.
No. Too bad.
Well, what do you say we forget the family tree for a moment, huh? And I'm trying to locate a guy named Hedges. I understand he applied for a position here a few weeks back.
Hedges. Yes, Hedges.
Do you happen to know if Sir Francis took him on or not?
As a matter of fact, I did. Felt sorry for the fellow.
Hey, wait a minute. You mean you're Sir Francis?
Oh, but of course. Who did you think I was? A jolly old butler?
I beg your pardon, sir. I mean, when you came to the door, I naturally figured that you were...
Just at present, I'm a trifle hard-pressed for servants. The fact is, I'm living here alone.
And Hedges?
He departed a little under a week ago.
Pretty short stay, wasn't it?
A sign of the times, old thing. You simply can't hang on to servants these days unless you're prepared to pay for them. Disgusting state of affairs, but what could one do?
A little under a week ago he left, eh?
Yes, that's right, a day after the auction.
Auction?
Yes, yeah, a small function organized on my behalf in an endeavor to settle one or two of my outstanding debts. Took every stick of furniture in the place. Even my dear old four-poster went west. No regard for tradition.
Oh, it's tough. Where was the auction held, you know?
Oh, I really couldn't say. I wasn't present myself. Hedges attended to the odious details, and the creditors took care of the rest.
You don't happen to recall if the items sold included a certain odd bookend, I suppose?
Bookend?
Hmm.
Oh, my dear old sock, for all I know, they could have included one or two stagnant authors. I simply haven't the faintest idea. You'd have to ask Hedges.
Yeah, well, first I've got to find him.
Oh, you might try Brandon Castle. I had a buzz just yesterday from the jolly old secretary. Said something about a fellow who claimed he'd work for me, applying for a job there. Wanted a reference or some such. Didn't quite catch the name, but he could have been Hedges. I said he was top-notch. Never did have much time for the Earl. False cousin of mine, you know. Or is it Fizz? Oh, somewhere in that vicinity.
Yes, well, it's worth a try, I guess. How do I get there?
Get where?
To Brandon Castle.
Why, you go to Brandon, of course, a few miles south of Seven Oaks, down in Kent.
Good afternoon, sir.
Ah, good afternoon. Do you have a Herbert Hedges working here?
I believe so, sir.
Well, I'd like to have a word with him.
I'm not sure that would be convenient, sir. Who shall I tell him is calling?
Augustus Montague Study, the 17th Earl of Buckingham, sometimes known as Meatball.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Yeah, just forget it. Just tell him that I'm here. Be quick about it, huh?
Very good, sir. Will you come this way?
Thus did Paul Study gain admittance to Brandon Castle, the Earl of Delmore's summer residence and one of England's most stately and traditional manors. A highly irregular debut into the orbit of the aristocracy, but nevertheless a most effective one. Led to a sort of drawing room at the rear of the castle, he was asked to wait. And a moment later, he discovered himself in the presence of a tall, spindly man, immaculately dressed and of most distinguished appearance.
You wish to speak with me, sir?
If you're Herbert Hedges, yes.
Of what service can I be to you, sir?
Well, for a start, you can lay off that kind of gaff. I've had enough of it for one lifetime. The name is Study. I'm from the Missing Persons Bureau.
Missing Persons Bureau?
Yes. Julius Badcock sent me. He wants his bookend back.
Oh, I rather imagined he might.
Well?
It is with regret that I must inform you, Mr. Study, that it is no longer in my possession.
You've sold it?
In a way, I suppose one could say that.
I guess you realize you've laid yourself wide open to a charge of theft.
I think not.
Well, you took it from Badcock's study, didn't you?
Borrowed would be a better word.
Look, if you let me have it back without any fuss, I might be able to persuade him against going to the police.
But, sir, how can I let you have it back when I haven't got it?
Well, who has got it, then?
I think perhaps I'd best explain.
Yeah, I think perhaps you had.
When Mr. Badcock dispensed with my services, I obtained a position in the household of Sir Francis Sparrow.
That much I know.
Well, as you may also know, I was extremely put out with Mr. Badcock. My dismissal was both unjustified and uncalled for. So I decided to teach him a lesson. Being aware of the fact that Sir Francis was close to bankruptcy, I suggested that an auction sale of his belongings might ease the situation to some extent. His creditors, of course, were all for the idea.
Go on.
Directly the date of the sale had been fixed, I paid a return visit to Mr. Badcock's home.
And left at the bookend.
Borrowed, sir. Yeah. This done, I advised Dr. Morley, a close friend of Mr. Badcock's, by means of an anonymous letter to attend the sale. He did so, and succeeded in buying back for £3,000 the very same bookend that I had borrowed from Mr. Badcock's study.
You mean...
Yes, sir. There was only the one bookend, and it is now back in my former employer's possession.
But how did you arrange it?
It wasn't too difficult. I simply included it in the items being auctioned. Then, of course, I made a point of being present at the sale myself for the express purpose of bidding against Dr. Morley in order that the highest possible price might be obtained.
Well, I'll be darned. And you call yourself a gentleman's gentleman?
A gentleman himself must be a gentleman before his gentleman can be called a gentleman's gentleman, sir.
Oh, well, that's a very profound statement, Hedges. But you know what?
Sir?
I'm fast coming to the conclusion that the gentlemen of this world have had their day. And as far as I can gather, the gentleman's gentlemen are taking over. Am I right?
Indubitably, sir. Indubitably.
In just a moment, Henry Simon returns to conclude the story. And here again is Henry Simon.
Needless to say, Julius Badcock did not go to the police to charge his former valet with theft. He didn't dare, for fear the ensuing publicity would make him a laughingstock of London. And somehow, you know, I'm inclined to think that his fears were justified. And now, this is Henry Simon inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you au revoir.